Hello there, dear listener. This is Brian, and I want you to rob us. But before we get to that, let me tell you a little bit about our year. 2025 is coming to an end, and we had a banner year here at Many Sided Media. We played games like Hell Whalers, Slug Blaster, Yazeba's Bed and Breakfast, and Last Train to Bremen. But did you know that those aren't the only games that we played? We actually played a whole lot more. Over on the Many Sided Media Patreon, we call it the Dice Pool, we play even more games and release bonus actual plays and cast talkbacks each and every month. And sometimes, we even get the designers of the games that we play to run them for us. This year, we had Felix Isaacs on to run us through an original three-part Wild Sea adventure that we called Wild Sea Wreckage. I got to play a Mothrin Raveler conspiracy theorist and is probably my favorite character that I got to play all year. And then we had Caleb Zane Hewitt on, who was the designer of the Emmy Award-winning Triangle Agency, who introduced us to an original three-episode series featuring a brand new anomaly and guest player, Taylor Moore. Plus, we played games like Scurry, Token, Tacklebox, and honestly, a ton more. I know what you're wondering. When is this heist happening? Well, I'm getting to that, because members of the Dice Pool get every episode of My First Dungeon and Talk of the Table ad-free, plus MP3s of the original music we make for our shows, plus cast talkbacks for every episode of My First Dungeon, and bonus roundtable discussions featuring folks like Evil Hat publisher Fred Hicks, actual play scholar Dr. Emily Friedman, and Dimension 20 creator Brennan Lee Mulligan. So that's all pretty shiny, right? Certainly worth stealing. So here's where the robbery comes in. All you have to do is go to patreon.com/manysidedmedia and sign up to become a member of the Dice Pool. You'll pay $10 a month and you will get access to literally everything we have ever made. But don't worry, you have my express, official, legally binding verbal permission to pay $10 one time, download everything we have, cancel your subscription, and then ride off into the sunset with 5,231 minutes of TTRPG podcast goodness. That is 87 hours or 3.63 days, and that is just the stuff that we made this year. We've got three more years of podcast goodness sitting on our Patreon, so you are making away with a king's ransom for just $10. And if that's not highway robbery, I do not know what is. But also, if you want to stay and lend your monthly support to the hardworking crew behind all the shows we make, we certainly would not mind. 2026 is going to be our biggest year yet. We have planned massive seasons of My First Dungeon. We have all-star guests lined up for Talk of the Table, and we are even making a few new shows to add to your podcast haul. So please go to patreon.com/manysidedmedia and rob us of everything we have ever made. And if enough of you do, next year's haul will be even bigger. Thanks for listening and enjoy the show. Merry Christmas! I know you've already opened a bunch of presents this past week, but if you look under the tree, I've actually got just one more for you. Yeah, that one right there. Right next to that empty space that I was supposed to fill with presents for everyone in my life. Yes, I have forsaken friends and family to give you one more podcast present. So, like, really enjoy it, okay? One of the biggest things that we did this year at Many Sided Media was add a bunch of spectacular new shows to the Many Sided Network. And so I'm giving you one last gift of another favorite TTRPG podcast for you to add to your collection. This last podcast in our Many Sided Advent calendar is a show called The Heart is a Dungeon. The Heart is a Dungeon is a multi-award-winning tabletop RPG podcast that focuses on sad, melancholy stories with majority BIPOC and femme-presenting casts. This particular episode is episode one of their recent series, No Gods, No After, and it's a mini-series that tells the story of four fallen gods attempting to survive a night in the world of Pangaea. I hope you've enjoyed opening all the little boxes in this many-sided advent calendar this year. We're going to enjoy the rest of our holiday break, but tune in on January 1st for the start of the next season of My First Dungeon, where we play Perils and Princesses. But without any further ado, please enjoy the show.
No Gods, No Afters is a TTRPG tragedy taking place in the city of Pangaea. This series is a little fucked up, so make sure to check the content warnings in the episode description. From all of us at the Heart is a Dungeon, thank you so much for listening.
See Pangaea, the largest city on the planet of Glen. Who do we resemble this late into the story? Surely we became the narrator who believed their own tale and swallowed. You fall. We see a hand passing over smooth water. And you fall. We hear the long calling voice of, is that our mother or our father bidding us to come home? Come stay. Please tell me all you've seen. But you fall. From heights not known enough to ever be loved. All across the horizon, we see a cityscape. Stretching to the ends of the world, and we see dozens, hundreds of lights descending, the same as you. And your form changes as you are torn down from the sky. Your form would no longer belong in paradise. And you are falling, about to become fallen. And in this moment of worlds kissing themselves goodbye, we will stop the tragedy and hold it in place. If only for the last time. We want to look at you. We want to look at how you change. And at what you become. Nekka. As you fall, surrounded in family, what do we see when we see you change?
It is pure, primal fear that encapsulates your vision. Amidst the clouds, amidst these burning golden orbs, there is a twisting, mustelid-esque-shaped creature trying to hold on claws, screaming, howling, squawking, sounds of all predator and prey coming forward, mottled fur and feathers, all in this twisted, almost serpent-like shape. But it's the face that captures your eyes the most. Man and wolf, eagle and crow, deer and hare, all mixing and appearing at the front, cowing back, molding like some sort of terrible clay. Nekanakaris is not one to go down without a fight. But that is not today, for her claws do not take any traction. She can only scream.
The entire world holds its breath as you pass by our broken hearts. We see another form above you, falling in this mutual calamity. What do we see, Yenna, when we begin to read about you?
Yenna is no stranger to falling. that this is something else entirely. This is unkempt. This is adrift. This is far from her control. And Yenna is someone who chases after that control. So as she falls, twisting through the air with nothing to grab onto, nothing to hold, and no one to hold her in turn, she can smell burning. It's only then she realizes that it is she herself that is burning as she falls and falls and falls. Pain is new. Why should gods feel pain? They are gods. But that has not saved her yet, and it will not save her as she plummets towards the ground. And for a moment, just before impact, she wonders to herself if this is where they were going all along.
And in that moment, before that thought becomes real, you step into the domain of another, descending from heights that will never be reached again. Erecrae, what do we see when we turn to your page and find your name?
A shroud, dying, reborn. A question, asked, unanswered. Their iridescent mantle burns away. They grasp at ribbons of fabric surrounding them. It burns away too. The fabric concealing them, wisping in the air, damp through clouds, falling, landing, where?
All the promises have now been broken. As we look to a form near all of you, as though you have all fallen from the same constellation or dream, Aramis, what do we see when we see you?
It's black. Large clouds of black smoke, almost as fire plummets down. Confusion. This is new. This is not. Where am I? You can see very glints of blackened white flame that just course around this large black cloud of smoke. Fear. Screams. Silence. What is? And just small flaps of smoky feathers from a single wing, weightless, powerless, covers their face. Sight. Sight. Seeing. Sound. Silence. As speed collects, tearing down into this unknown land.
You all learn and grow at the same moment as you discover pain. You smash through level after level after level of a parking structure in downtown Pangaea on the world of Glen. The pain builds slowly, almost too polite to scream without at least introducing itself, as it reminds you of what you now fucking are. There are no prayers rising to or from you in this moment. The dust has to settle. Everything has to settle sooner or later. And we see four figures rising from rubble, emerging in the dust. Who has gathered a new form to themselves first?
Erecrae rises first, their charcoal top of their shroud, rising in the plume of dust, dust settling down the fabric draping their body to a grayish white at the bottom. Where are we? Wait. Pause and don't answer that. Let me sit here with this.
As the dust settles on this unknown land, that glinting black flame slowly shrouds out into wisps of deep, dark ichor and smoke, and forms into a large, very tall behemoth of a shadow. No face to see, no body to normally articulate or ambulate. Feeling, form, my siblings.
With that question, your innocence is lost. You feel and see liquid gold hardening on your skin as you bleed. It drips off of you and strikes the concrete like a stone or a pebble.
Interesting. It's pain. Aramis pulls up his shadowy hand, or what looks like a hand, and he sees it falling to the ground. And he tries to catch it with his wing, but he notices that it doesn't move.
The thing that pushes itself off the ground is startlingly human. It heaves. Its chest rises and falls with pained gasps. It crawls. Has to push itself up onto its knees and then onto its hands and then slowly support itself against a metal husk that used to be a car to rise to its feet. She looks down at her hands and she doesn't recognize them. That's hardly strange for her. What's strange is that she cannot change them. These hands that are meant to be hers, but no longer seem to be, are strangers, as much strangers as everything that seems to be around her now. She touches her face. She still has a face. It's, once again, remarkably human. It's contorted in pain and a grief that she doesn't recognize. Fight or flight? When flight's no longer an option, she realizes, as she tries to bat her wings. Beautiful wings. What wings? You don't have those anymore. Surely you must realize that. What else don't you have?
The thing in the corner of this parking garage is angry. It is a swirl of fury and sorrow and terror. Mankind, the greatest predator that has ever stalked the earth, the last hunter, mixed with his first companion, the face of a canid, small, large-eared, amber-eyed, glued, stitched together in a way that is hauntingly familiar. It looks like something taken from a tribal epigraph. But it is made flesh, and she is angry. Fools, you fucking fools! We're not supposed to bleed! We're not supposed to be the prey of the quarry! What are you doing? And it looks for some kind of exit, some kind of den. It's trying to walk. It's like a newborn fawn if it had fangs.
Is that you, Nekka? Don't you wonder what it must be like, though, on the other side?
Oh, so speakly speaks the fox when he's in the hen's house. You, dear sibling, are a fool. We are going to die. Our death awaits us out there. Why not just curl up in a den and await it? That was all you were ever good for. Possibilities.
You see the smoke moving across the space.
This is new. Where? Why? I can't feel you.
Oh, well, I am here. At least part of me.
It's new. Pain. It's fine.
Pain. We are no strangers to pain, we are strangers to feeling it. You and I both know the pain of humanity, and it seems they have decided to inflict it upon us.
The cycle has flipped. The food chain now ends with us as it chokes around our necks, while you would sit here and debate it. We must flee. Kill if we must. For now, we are things that are killable.
It's a curse. It's pain. Retribution. This is of our own doing.
Wouldn't it be fun to discover, to experience? I will accompany you all if you wish to flee. I do enjoy your company.
I seek no new experiences, only answers.
If we must pretend that things can return to the way they once were, then I shall. It is hopeful to dream, and I do hope that this isn't our end. From the screaming outside, it seems that many are coming to theirs, and I would prefer not to witness any of your demises anytime soon.
The light that is cast across you all is one from flame, from shadow. You can see into the street. You see Kristen, the god of quiet mornings, a timid and gentle creature, convulsing as their throat is being opened over a bucket and gold is pouring out. They are surrounded by dozens of shapes that are cheering and laughing. You hear gunfire, screams, death. An organic trauma is coming from everywhere. The city is not open to you, but it is waiting.
Nekka will sort of half walk, half crawl, as if she's not quite gotten used to this malignant form she has taken. Come, whelps, we must find a den. Someplace dark and hidden from the recesses of man.
Seems that Nekka's humor hasn't fallen either.
And you can see Aramis, the shadowy shape that forms into a being, kind of descends into a pool of that black ichor and smoke, and it slinks, almost snake-like, towards the nearest, like, wisp of light.
From this point, you could turn left or to the right. There are situations, large groups everywhere. Directly across the street, there's an alley that leads to a more green space, but it is dark there as well. Or you can go backwards. Your life is your own for now.
The thing that's now Yenna, every time you look at her, she seems to be different. If you didn't know her to be what she is, you might not recognize her at all. The only thing that seems to remain consistent is that the shirt she's wearing has completely burned off on the back, and where her wings used to be are broken and tattered joints, the bones sticking out from beneath her skin, charred black. Her eyes are still the gold that you know, the gold that some of you have loved, that humans have loved. She looks around as the four of us walk. There's an unease to be had besides the witnessing of so many of her companions murdered, killed for their blood, killed for the simple pleasure of it, killed for existing. She is so used to people having to wear masks to fit in, to hide themselves away. Humanity is so good at hiding. Maybe it's the fall. Maybe she's not in touch with her divinity so much as she once thought she was. But there are no masks to be found here. Humanity has let loose, so to speak. And it unnerves her greatly, and she treads as close to Erechrae as possible. Not quite holding their hand, but close enough that it's a comforting presence to be had.
My dearest listener, have I got a secret for you? Bitcherton is an improvised comedy podcast inspired by the stories of Jane Austen that tells the tale of a wealthy family's secrets, scandals, and shenanigans. Lady Bitcherton has unwed daughters, nosy neighbors, awful country cousins, and now a body to hide. Will the Bitchertons be able to keep their secrets off the pages of Lady Bigwither's gossip sheet? Or will her pen skewer their good name forever? Oh, Bits, what a predicament. Featuring the voices of Katie Marovich, Iffy Waddyway, Carolyn Page, Alex Songsharp, Brian Flaherty, and Cassie Wilson, plus a dance card filled with guest comedians of the very finest quality. But for us to help the seeds of rumor ripen into the juicy plum of scandal, we'll need your help. Bitcherton is heading to Kickstarter on June 13th. Go to bitcherton.com to pre-save the campaign and help us bring this story to life. Ta-ta! For now.
As you move out, if all of you would be so kind as to mark off one of those deity points from the impact of your fall. Neka, there is a moment, and it's unique, a call moving through you, like a distant horn requesting aid from a friend or a stranger, and you suddenly can see somewhere else. You see a beautiful genderqueer individual with a bright green mohawk wearing denim that's covered in patches, small in frame and terrified. There's a group of larger individuals holding baseball bats or chains, and they enter the space and scan the area for them, each wearing a cap with the flag of Pangaea in the center, bright and bold. And you hear this prayer.
Hide me. Hide my way. Cover my trail, Neka, I beg, as someone who is wild and free.
Neka, you may spend a deity point to grant this prayer, but you do not have to.
Survival is a selfish thing. Neka hears this. Her ears twitch, her canine head turning towards this cry. Another whelp for the pile. Another weakling culled. By survival. Evolution. She ignores it. This god is trying to survive. She will spare no others.
All around this city, stories are coming to an end. With a whimper and a lifetime of love being released from a broken body. And you move into the street.
With the screams and all of the action that's happening on the street, in this smoky form, Aramis jumps between shadow to shadow. He felt the same notion that Yenna did. And he moves between shadow of each person, of each human, bouncing over his sibling gods, and he goes, "Adultery. Theft. This one's a liar. That smell. That smell." And he hops from shadow to shadow. "That smell, it's pure. Searching, search, pure. No broken promises. Murder. Fun." And then he just hops between shadow, looking for a crawl space. But he's being pulled by this scent, this pure scent. It doesn't smell the same as each shadow that he jumps into. Every single person that he touches their shadow, there is a promise that he can pull, that he can see, that he can sense. And it's enticing. A very small, black and white dog. Pure. No promises. Can't stay here. It's that large stalking shadowy form. It hovers over this dog. It reaches down, but not with a claw, not with a malicious intent, but probably the softest form that Aramis has taken since he fell. That smoke turns into a gentle hand. That hand leads up into a very large arm, and now you can actually see somewhat of a humanoid form of Aramis, and he's just whole in this moment of one small wisp of purity. And his eyes glow burning black. And he looks down at this dog and he goes, "Can't stay here. Can't move." And his speech begins to form out of ideas and thoughts into need to find a place, need to hide, need to find something. And it just rages as if the sight of this purest form of love and companionship and loyalty is the adverse to what makes him whole. And he swings his head and he locks eyes with what he now knows is this pet's owner, and he goes, hidden truths, false truths. And he slinks back into that smoke and he wisps along the leg of this owner. And as it travels up the leg, in cuff, out of cuff, in one nostril, out of the other, into the ear, but then forming into that astral smoke cloud of chaos and now anger. "You will be my hiding place." And sinks right into the eyes of this being as Dr. Bear hits the ground. Dr. Bear's eyes, who once were a very bright, glinting gold, falsified hope to all of his patients, that gold sinks into a deep, smoking black pupil's iris is consumed as he lays there.
Dr. Bear, or what used to be Dr. Bear, will hear the delicate scratch of well-clipped nails, well-tended paws following behind him. But then the pup barks, and its jaw is far too wide. There are too many teeth, too many eyes. And it's not a friendly come hither. It is the grating cry of Nekka. Follow me, fool. Dazzled hair, foolish quart. How do we even share the same ichor? Look at you. All coming for this tiny little yapping beast as it struts forward, its eyes, many eyes, now looking for something, somewhere, as it calls upon its former godly powers to find a place of safety.
Aramis's Dr. Bear sees this, and a ghastly smile comes across his face, and he bends down to the dog and he goes, "I've never seen you look more beautiful, sibling."
Give me a roll for see-through, if you would.
That is a total of 7.
And you see this as a god would. Options in destiny are active everywhere. Across the street, in the alley, you see the smear of gold where a body was obviously moved, dragged through the stones and the dirt. In that same moment, in the other direction, where you saw your sibling being milked of their light, you hear gunshots as a well-armed group, in tactical gear and helmets, open fire on the mob, shooting them in the backs as they bend this angel forward for every last drop. These more official-looking mortals go to Kristen once everyone is dead and move their body into a bag, silently carrying it on their shoulders and moving down the street in the other direction. You emerge from an alley into the Heihei Community Garden. At one time, it was beautiful, but it is currently covered in ash. The thunder cracks through the sky and you pass by bees the size of corgis, small deer-like creatures with wings, and yellow butterflies, laying still all over the ground, not moving. There's a mural on a nearby wall of an impact, of a wounding. There's a small figure standing in the center of it. There's also a shed a little further in, up against the magnolia trees, and the trail of gold, no longer liquid, but now hard, leads to there.
As we walk, Aramis will hear a new voice ask, "Aramis, may I have your coat, please?"
"Arms, yes."
Neat. Takes the coat off.
Yenna slides her arms into this coat. She seems much slighter now, so small. The jacket seems to envelop her entirely.
"I cannot hide myself as well as either of you. I'd rather not get caught out."
"I am completely hidden. Do you think it will matter?"
"You are always hidden, dear sister."
Erikrey, in that moment, a prayer does find you. You are not hidden from all. You see the inside of an ambulance. The siren is loud. The sounds of the world are so fucking loud. There is the face of someone sweating, wiping their brow with the back of their wrist. The hands are in gloves and covered in blood. We do not see what the life they are trying to stitch to time looks like. We do not see who they are trying to save, but they are praying.
"They taught this to us. What was it? What was it? I need to remember. Please, please remember."
Out the windows we see chaos, violence, a guillotine, the vehicle dodging people and bodies everywhere as it's trying to make its way. Do you grant this prayer and spend a part of yourself?
"Oh, there is a one who begs for a reprieve, begs for a moment of sureness. I will enjoy this."
Erkray pauses, very still, and you don't see a smile on their face or where their face would be shrouded under charcoal black fabric. But there is a peace very apparent in their form as they take in this moment.
As you watch a light go dim, we see you moving through the garden as lights fall from the sky behind you. You have reached this small structure, Neca within the shape of sky. It is not a large building. Someone from here would assume it's for like groundskeeping or something of the sort.
I'll use this pathetic form's little paws to just push on it, test it. I am not used to this form, but if prey I must be, then the most difficult quarry I shall become.
When the door opens, you see gold, hard in a pool on the ground, light playing off of it from like a nearby camping light. And you see Serenity, the goddess of love letters, stretched out in their paper-thin clothing, usually shifting and alive with words all over it as terms for lovers are constantly being born. But you do not see that now. The paper is brittle and dry. You do see a brown-skinned, mask-presenting figure, dirty with soil, with vines and plant life wrapped around his shoulders or his wrists. There are tears in his eyes, and he holds her head in his lap.
Are they sad because of this particular instance, or are they sad of something that led to it?
Why don't you give me a roll for understand, adding your soul modifier?
That's beautiful. It's 12. I didn't roll double sixes, but collectively it's 12. When we enter, smoke bubbles in Dr. Bear's eyes, and all of you can hear it, but no one else can. You just hear, sleep. And the smoke leaves Dr. Bear's eyes as he hits the ground. And it just trails across the arm of this person that we found and hovers over their face. This person, when they look into the smoke, it's a deep, dark, black abyss. They hear small cries, not screams. And they hear whispers of others. You said you wouldn't. I can't believe you did this. Why would they do this to me?
A mortal life is stretched out in front of you, like the sound of a music box or an afternoon walk. There's not much worth mentioning, but it's easy to take in. But you do see this individual sit in this park a few months back, having made a decision to change. He allowed the plants to grow over him. He didn't eat. He did not speak. Locals began lighting candles in front of him or leaving photographs of clouds. The saint of the garden, if there ever was one. But then you see, about an hour ago, his eyes moving up to the sky as he watches a star tumble. And a part of his heart that he believed to be asleep was broken, and he stood, tearing the vines with the movement. And Marquez made his way, with tired, tired knees, as though going through a church aisle or an alleyway at the end of the world. And he found her, and he did not understand what was going on, or who she was, and he brought them back here. And sat beside them while they died.
Pure, but still broken. This one isn't for me. Shame.
Pathetic. from all the way down on the ground where this tiny little pup is. It is chosen to lay down and die and be consumed, noble to return your worthless flesh to the earth at the very least. But this den shall be ours, for as long as the hunt shall take us. And Nekka, in this tiny little form, is just going to go over and start trying to dig at the roots of where this man is, and begin to try and settle in.
But they did keep their promise to themselves. Shame. I was hungry.
You are always hungry. It is your nature.
Some things are within our nature, and this man of the garden rises to give you the space.
I would like to go up to them and place a shrouded hand on the side of their face. What is it that you wonder while you wait?
He has not spoken in so long. He's not sure that he remembers how to. He coughs and gasps. It's so dry. He shoves his fingers in his mouth, into his throat, and he removes a single yellow butterfly that survives in the air, but just for a moment, before falling to the golden floor. How could one describe to you the love a human can have for the entire world? That they do not wonder without knowing. They wonder after loving. When wonder and prayer are so tightly bound, it can be impossible to separate the question from the worship.
I don't think I can answer your wonders. What a beautiful state. I think I'll let you stay here.
What does mortal love resemble to a force such as you?
It is a concept so alien. Erekrey understands the desire to know. The desire to know if one's actions, one's intentions are reciprocated. To know if they are genuine. To know what they mean. But I don't think that Erekrey understands what they mean.
As Marquez goes to the door to give one last offering to the gods, he opens it and you see three bullets hit him in the chest, and he falls down. You hear heavy-booted feet moving through the park beyond that doorway, surrounding this sacred moment with body armor and weapons being loaded. Once upon a time, there were four fallen gods in a garden at the end of the world.
Yat-e, I'm Abigail Yazzie, and I is your Nekka Nenekeres.
I'm Sadie Pasley, and I had the privilege of playing Erekrey, the Unsieved, the moment before dawn, the held breath.
Hello, I'm Ian, or your boy Bing, and I played Aramis, the god of broken promises.
I'm Tatiana, and I played Yana, the goddess of masks.
Hey, I'm Rara. But that's enough about that.